All of us here at the PWO Place to Be Nation were saddened to hear of the passing of Adam Cech after a valiant fight against cancer. Adam had been a member of our little community for some time, and he will be missed. He leaves behind a loving wife and two young sons, and our love and condolences go out to them and all of his family and friends. During his battle, Adam had said that listening to the podcasts on the feed helped him get through some of those tough times during his fight. So we'd like to ask everyone out there to help lend a hand to his family. A GoFundMe page has been established for future educational expenses for his boys and to fulfill his plans for the boys to see a Packers game at Lambeau Field. Whatever you can donate will be greatly appreciated and will be put towards helping this young family navigate a future without Adam. Just head over to GoFundMe.com and put in Adam's Pack dash helping Adam's family in the search engine, and please give what you can. Thank you.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Am I more than you bargained for yet? I've been dying to tell you anything you want to hear, because that's just who I am this week.
And welcome to This Week in Wrestling. I am Pete, and I'm with Timothy. Timothy, man, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, Pete. Just got done. I was recording the epic top 50 wrestlers of 2016 with Quentin and Moody over on Psychology is Dead. Should be showing up here on the Pro Wrestling Only feed. I think we went somewhere close to 9 hours, definitely over 8 hours going over the top 50. You think we'd have more crossover? You know, me and him both pretty much watch all the same stuff, but we hit so many different guys all over the place, and we're both just passionate about who we're talking about. So we just really got into it and just kept going and going. So kind of worn out a little bit. And luckily you said we could take it a little bit easy this week on This Week in Wrestling. So that helped out, because I'm a little bit close to pooped. And then now I got to go deal with Christmas with the family. So how about you, Pete? How you been?
I'm doing good, man. You sound a lot better than the night after PWG. Or 2 nights after PWG. So how long does it usually take for your voice to get back?
Oh, it depends. I've been being good, though. I mean, I don't even really drink at the PWG shows anymore, so I don't go too insane. And then I've been being good about not screaming, so usually I'm fine by, like, a day or two. But Pete Dunne, I mean, he's a guy who, I won't spoil it for anybody that's going to listen to, but he got remarkably high on my top 50. So he's a guy that I'm really, really, really high on. So when his music hit, I went completely nuts, to the point where I think that's where I just completely destroyed my voice, screaming my lungs out for him specifically. So, you know, special situations like that will kill me, and then I'll be kind of out of it for a while. But usually I'm good like a day or two later.
Okay. And I like Timothy hit on it. We're taking it a little easy this week, maybe because we're gearing up for Christmas this week. So we're just going to review the TVs of ROH, CWF Mid-Atlantic, Worldwide, and NXT. And then we're actually going to go over our Observer Awards, the A-list. Not all the little other thingy bobs like Best Move. I don't give a shit. And so we're just going to hit on those as we close the show out. But let's start off with Ring of Honor. And before we get into the TV, they're supposed to run here in February, like the week after Royal Rumble. Kyle O'Reilly's not on the appearing list thing. Is it possible he has the title and he's not signed by Ring of Honor right now?
That is the rumor going around. So if you listen to Talking Sheet, you hear them talk about Dark Twitter. The messages going back and forth on Dark Twitter at the moment are that Kyle O'Reilly has not signed to ROH, and he's the champion. So after, you know, January, whenever it is that, because they tried to switch over to the New Japan model of signing guys for a year that ends in January. But what's funny is, kind of right when ROH picked that up, New Japan jettisoned it as they had that grand exodus last year. So Kyle was one of the guys that got on the new Japan style ROH contract, and supposedly his contract goes out at the end of the year, and he's the champion, and he hasn't signed anything. So they're not announcing him to be there.
So January 4th, we'll have a pretty good figure on if he's going or staying.
I would assume, I don't know that they like marked it exactly January 4th, but I would assume that New Japan did mark it January 4th.
He's booked to work Adam Cole. So right, if Cole wins, I'm assuming he's leaving, would be my guess, is my point.
Yeah, but then the other side of that story is Adam Cole is rumored to also be on the way out. So
right, but I hear he's at least in March.
Right, so it's it's definitely, I guess if we don't know anything before the 4th, we'll definitely find out on the 4th if he'll be at the Rumble shows or not. I guess.
I mean, for business, I mean the title win was built as a big win for the guy and a big opportunity we'll talk about the promo. But he's not even signed. It's like, why waste a big win and then the push? And I mean, that seems like just makes no sense whatsoever if he's not under contract.
Well, and especially you don't want to then have to have him drop the title in a couple months, yeah, because you're not sure about his contract negotiation. And then what happens when he stays? And then you know, because you weren't sure and this and that, and you had him drop the title, and then now he's coming back and he already lost the belt. So whatever. It's like, it's a real rough situation for ROH. I kind of can't blame them for following through with Kyle because he really did need to win the title when he did, but should have gotten the signs.
Yeah, but if he's not staying, they should not have wasted a win for him. They could have given it to Cole again. And maybe built up something for somebody and make it mean something. I mean, giving the win to Kyle, and even if they take it back from him, it, at this point, it's just bad business. I mean, why? I mean, why?
Even if they could have got him.
Why give him that momentum? I mean, we easily could have gone to. I mean, honestly, they could have got an injury angle. I mean, they really couldn't have. I was thinking they could have done an injury angle and put Bobby Fish in there, but he really couldn't because his mother passed away on the same show. But they could have done something and not built up the momentum for Kyle O'Reilly for a big title change. They could have put a back burner in him and maybe, heat him up again. It just, to me, knowing that you're going into going into this without a contract, giving him that momentum, it's just bad business.
No, and I can't believe that they couldn't have gotten Kyle to sign an extension and made a deal. Because I've heard of guys doing that. They say, okay, what we'll do is we'll give you a 3-4 month extension, but you can negotiate with WWE even during your extension, and then that way, you get around your non-tampering clause. And but we get to say for sure that we'll have you, so we can have you drop the belt. You know what? And it's just like, why was none of that? Like, something should have been done here to make sure that they had something covering their ass with this. Because if they have to turn around and put the belt back on Adam Cole on January 4th, just because that's the way the booking works out, it's going to look really bad.
I agree. I mean, it's just like, I mean, I'm so happy. Because, if he didn't win the title, he wasn't coming back. The fact that he won the title, I thought for sure that meant he was signed. And the fact that he's not on the booking sheets for 2017 and for one of the first big shows of the year in February, that's just bad news. But hey, I mean, we don't have anything concrete, but it just makes Ring of Honor look just really Mickey Mouse, like, just bad. I mean, you can't. This sounds like something shit TNA would do. I mean, that's how bad it is. All right, but we open up with Ring of Honor, and Kyle O'Reilly is the new champ. Comes out, starts doing cuts a promo, and Adam Cole's out, and he's promoing it, and Dalton Castle's out, and then finally Bobby Fish is out. All these guys coming out with promos, and I thought this was a good segment, but it kind of like highlights our worries about Kyle not having any heels to work with, because honestly, Bobby Fish is a babyface. Adam Cole, you can argue, is a babyface because he gets cheered. And Dalton Castle is a babyface. So, I mean, yes, it's great that they picked three contenders or three lined up three possible challengers for Kyle's belt right off the bat, but none of them are true heels in that sense. So it kind of, I think it kind of like summarizes where we're coming from, where, you know, they should have had heels ready for him to work with, and that's Ring of Honor's problem, is they're just terrible at creating heels. What were your thoughts on the promo and my talking points here?
Yeah, I mean, the promo was great, and Kyle came across good as a promo here as the champion. It's kind of funny. He seems like he might be a guy who will grow into feeling legit now that he has the belt. I mean,
I totally agree with you. I totally felt that vibe off him when I was watching it. Totally.
Yeah, he had good championship swagger, even though he's kind of wearing weird-looking shorts that just don't come across. It's like, I really wish that these guys would. I mean, Bobby Fish always dresses the part. You think he would have picked that up from him, because he looks a little bush in a t-shirt and shorts, but, you know, whatever, that's not a big deal. But he is starting to have that I'm the man swagger. I thought the promo was solid. Adam Cole obviously shows him up in the promo game, though, instantly, which I think was probably a bad call. You have your champion cut his first promo, and then he instantly gets interrupted by a guy who's clearly a better promo. That's just one of those oversights that they probably should have thought about. And then you go even further by having...
Is it an oversight if they think maybe he's not signing?
It could be. I mean, maybe that. Yeah, maybe they're trying to bury him.
You look at it. I was talking to Brad W. I mean, he played pretty much face in peril in the tag match in the main event.
Yeah, no, I was actually.
Is that a way to promote your world champion right off winning the belt?
That was a talking point when we got into the match as well. For me, I noticed that, that he was getting his ass kicked for most of the match, and then works into the hot tag. But yeah, you have Adam Cole come out, show him up on promo. Then to top it off, you have probably the second best promo guy, or at least the second most over guy in the company, Dalton Castle, come out. And then probably the second best promo guy and Bobby Fish come out. And it's just like, Jesus, you're trying to, like, Adam or Kyle cut a decent promo to start out. And then you just keep topping and topping and topping. And I think one of the... Yeah, you're just overshadowing him. He's supposed to be the man. And then I think one of the worst parts about it is, as you said, these guys are all... kind of babyface, even Adam Cole, is that when I come out of it, the guy I'm the most excited for is a little bit more serious Dalton Castle, talking about how I'm an ass kicker, and I'm like, fuck, he's the biggest babyface of the whole group. And so now I'm sitting here going, well, I want to see Kyle O'Reilly fight the guy who's a bigger babyface than him.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, Jesus, what is going on here?
I thought for Dalton Castle, I thought it changed his character into a more serious, where I could actually buy him more as a world title guy now, you know? I've been against putting the belt on Dalton Castle, but actually here he felt like a world champion, and like felt like he didn't feel like a total gimmick, and as opposed to what I felt he's been. He was more dusty here than Adrian Street, and I feel he could, you know what, if worst comes to worst, he's a guy they could do a run, give a run to, but they better goddamn come up with a good angle for him.
He came off great here, but again, I like the promo, I like the angle, I like everything about it. It feels weird for Kyle, and then the other kind of small detail I want to point out is that the first TV after Adam Cole won the title was this kind of same scenario, except for it was Mike Elgin, Jay Lethal, and Kyle O'Reilly. So it feels a little repetitive that they're going, well, as soon as we have a new champion, the first episode we do is we show that a bunch of people are gunning for him.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just kind of like, God, like, especially with what it ended up doing is overshadowing Kyle. It's kind of like you should have done almost anything else and just had one person. Like, it should have just been Adam Cole if you really had to do that. So to me, yeah, it just everything about it was good, except for like how I feel the long term ramifications of it are. But the actual execution was fantastic.
I agree. Totally agree. And then we lead into the Decade of Excellence tournament, which I think is actually sounds pretty cool. I think it's a good idea. Then we get a Daniels promo, and then we lead to a Daniels versus Mark Briscoe match. What are your thoughts on the Decade of Excellence tournament, Daniels promo, and the match in general?
The Decade of Excellence tournament is fantastic. I love that they showed the brackets before the match starts, because I'm a brackets guy. I love that stuff. It makes me feel like real sports. you're thinking of March Madness and stuff like that. So, boom, there's that. Then they both do inset promos before the match, and I really hope that they keep that going for the whole Decade of Excellence, because that's just, it's campy old wrestling goodness. Like, it was just perfect, and like, it really can help differentiate ROH from WWE or TNA even at this point. It's like, this is the kind of campy, schlocky stuff that just makes them stand out. And like, I like the way that they're playing up their nostalgia of their, these guys have all been here for a decade. The way that they're doing it, I just think is perfect. Like, they're making it out to be something good. They're having them have this special tournament. It's prestigious. So it's just like, I think a perfect way to pull something like this off. So I'm definitely into the tournament. And the promo, I thought Chris Daniels' promo was great. I thought Mark Briscoe's promo, they kind of fit what his role needed to be in this match and this whole setup. So I just thought, this is good stuff. I'm excited for this tournament.
Ditto. A lot of fun names in there. I think we can have some fun matches. Then we got Leo Rush versus Caprice Coleman, and this leads to a Rebellion promo, and Rush gets a quick pin that leads to a beatdown, and then White and Dijak save. So, I mean, coming off TV from last week, Dijak was with Prince Nana. Now he's without him again. Is that just bad, inconsistent booking, or is it supposed to mean something this time? I mean, because we thought he turned babyface last time, then he went back, I guess, kind of like heel, but now he's back saving another babyface. That's how you kill a character, by not establishing if he's a good guy or a bad guy. You can't. Tweeners are freaking DOA. What do you think they're doing here with Dijak?
Trying to fuck him over, I think. I think they're trying to fuck up what seems like a can't miss prospect, honestly. And what sucks is that it feels like they've been fucking with Dijak for the longest time. And we talk about can't miss prospects, that where they messed him up to begin with is when he won the top prospect tournament. Yeah. He came out of it looking like a fucking, like, just hot, you know, hell, straight out of, bat out of hell or whatever. He's all fired up. He's hot. He's a big deal. And then instantly the first thing they do is he says, you know what, instead of taking my TV title, I'm going to join the House of Truth. So he doesn't take a TV title shot to become a background muscle guy in a fucking stable.
They ripped his ball sack right off him and fed it to the fucking guppies around, you know? It was embarrassing how they brought him in. And where he's supposed to have a lot of momentum, and him not passing up on his title match immediately screams pussy. And as a heel, that sucks, and as a babyface, it sucks. And they still don't know what the fuck they're doing with him, because the dude can do go. He has charisma. He has a good look. He's big, and they don't know how to freaking book him. It's almost mind blowing to me. With what they do with the guy. Because, we've seen him tear it up. I mean, I've seen him live tear it up. I've seen him tear it up on tape. I mean, the guy can go. And he has charisma. And has a good look. And he's a generally nice guy who has connections. Who can connect to the crowd. Yet they just drop the ball with him here constantly. Feel like I'm hating on Ring of Honor right now, and I'm not liking it, because all the behind the scenes things is infuriating me and stuff in a way, I guess. But then we got the Bucks and Cole, and it seemed like a really really big match versus O'Reilly, Fish, and Castle. I enjoyed this. I liked how we got the faces to shine big to start. And then we get triple super kicks to set up the heat. Castle gets the hot tag at first. And then I thought this was a great way to showcase Castle, as opposed to, why aren't you showcasing your new champion? But he was too busy playing face of peril and selling for all the heels and getting his ass handed to him and getting saved by his veteran partner potentially the guy who might end up usurping him and being the king of the company. And I thought the finish was a lot of fun too. But you want to get Kyle, we should be coming out with a lot of steam, and they kind of like chopped him off the legs with the promo and then putting him his face in peril. It sounds like a guy who isn't going to be long for the company. What about you? What do you think?
I hope so. I kind of hope that he's not long for the company, because it's like, this is the kind of shit that ROH does, and before it was the complaint that they kept the title on the same guy forever and the same guys forever, because they would only keep it on the guys who were on contract, and then you know, the stuff with Elgin and all this weird things happen, and then, yeah, now it feels like if he stays after the way that they're treating him, he's just not going to ever have the same heat that he had before again. He's not going to be able to get it back. So it's just this match. I mean, I liked the Young Bucks made it very clear from the start and then throughout the whole match that they had one mission here, which is just to help Adam Cole get revenge on Kyle O'Reilly. And I really liked that. It almost at times felt like it was a one-on-one match with like some extra hoopla going around the ring, but it was really all about that. But you don't have to throw away the rematch between Kyle and Cole instantly, and I thought they did a great job framing it that way. Dalton Castle getting the hot tag was phenomenal, but it's like, Kyle is just taking the heat forever, getting just the crap kicked out of him by all three guys, and then it takes Castle coming in to save the day, then Bobby Fish comes in and saves the day, and I don't know what they're looking for here, but coming out of this, I'm just super excited for a Dalton Castle versus Kyle O'Reilly match. I hope that becomes the big blow-off match out of this, and that sucks because I was one of the people that was super, super excited for Kyle O'Reilly's title win, and now
I was right with you, man. I mean, trust me. Within a week of done, they've just totally fucked it up. I mean, 4 steps forward, 10 steps back. I mean, that's what seems like Ring of Honor's motto lately. And, God, I can't believe they're fucking it up with Kyle. It's so simple, yet they're fucking it up, man. Overall, though, I thought it was an interesting show. I don't think it helped them very much because it was, you know, I thought the booking was really bad and making Kyle O'Reilly look the weakest out of the group. It's never good with your freshly minted new champion. Ring of Honor needs to take a step back, take a breath, and focus on what they do well and book it smart. I mean, that's all you need. And I mean, hell, maybe they could go take some notes from CWF Mid-Atlantic and show them how to book their champion. Okay. But wow, what were your thoughts overall on Ring of Honor?
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because it was a small thing and it kind of got overlooked in my review here just based on how bad they made Kyle look. But I think there was also a little spot in here where the Young Bucks and Adam Cole go for a triple, or they're all going for power bombs at the same time. And the Young Bucks hit theirs, no problem, up for the apron power bombs. And then Adam Cole needs help from the Young Bucks to do his. And it's another one where I'm like, funny spot. But it kind of makes the guy who was just the champion look insanely weak. I mean, I know it's supposed to be he had a super hard fight at Final Battle, but the Bucks they had a match on that show too, you know? So it's kind of like, what the fuck? So there needs to be a little bit more. I mean, I don't know, maybe it's intentional because both guys are maybe out the door, but you would think there'd be a little bit of like quality assurance here as someone's running by and going, hey, you know, we're making our two top guys kind of look like shit in this one show. Maybe we should, you know, not do that. Maybe we should protect our guys. And who knows? I mean, there could be some kind of weird backstage politics situation, as we said, that both guys are leaving. So as they get them out the door, they're going to just kind of job them out. And that's a really interesting way to do that, because I think you're better off keeping someone strong until they actually do the job so that you get the most out of the job instead of degrading him in these little ways and having him kind of bleed out by 1,000 paper cuts before they just do the honors on the way out and it means nothing.
Damn, death by 1,000 paper cuts. Holy crap. That's brutal, man. Man, you've been watching some sick shit. Let's transition over to CWF Mid-Atlantic.
There we go.
And let me get back into a happy zone. I thought this was a really fun TV show. Just really solid wrestling. Some fun, interesting stuff they did. Did you have fun watching the show?
Of course. CWF is, it's the warm blanket, man. It's this, I think they always hit the spot, and this is another one of the shows that's obviously in a different building, and you sometimes wonder if it's they just recorded matches from another promotion running, or if it's like a sold show or something. But it's nice because switching things up that way as you're then going into the big show kind of makes this feel like a nice little interlude.
Yep.
But they still kind of tell the stories and they're leading into the big matches in a way that's really exciting. So yeah, I'm just like, I thought this was great.
Yeah, it opens up with Smith Garrett versus John Schuyler for Garrett's TV title with a 10-minute time limit. I like this. I wasn't blown away by it, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was like a 2.5-star match. But I'll tell you one thing about Schuyler that I really like is some of the little things he does. It's like grinding his elbow when he's on top or going for a pin, rubbing it into the forehead. So, I mean, he's really good at doing like a lot of the little stuff that a lot of people wouldn't even bother to do because they don't deem it as important. But, I mean, here I thought he was fantastic doing that. And I enjoyed how they worked the gimmick of the 10 minutes. And I thought that was really well done. What about you? What were your thoughts here on the match?
Yeah, no, I thought...
And I thought the finish. I absolutely loved the finish because we're all thinking it was going to a Broadway and we get the flash pin. I thought that was really executed pretty well.
Yeah, I would say the only issue with the finish is that the over the loudspeaker or whatever countdown was a little bit fast for syncing up with the pin because they were already at three before he started pinning, so the ref had to fast count a little bit, which kind of sucks for the credibility of the ref. As you can hear the guy counting down three and he's counting the pin faster, but the match itself, I mean, that's a little timing cue issue that you can't really do much with, but the match itself was phenomenal. I thought John Schuyler did such a good job here, and the commentary putting it over, and obviously with it being Stutz, you know that it was the story that they were told to tell, and they did such a good job of it, of Schuyler really, he was playing Arn Anderson as the TV champ and trying to kind of grind him away and play the time limit, even though he wasn't the champ. But the conversation was, you know, can Garrett beat someone like that? Can he win the TV title that has the time limit, that has the guy who's willing to stall and take the, you know, so it's kind of nice. It's Schuyler setting him up with essentially a very similar match type that he's going to have at the pay-per-view, a very similar match setting that he's going to have at the, I guess I keep saying pay-per-view, at the big show. And I just thought that was perfect. And yeah, battle cadence. And I just think tons of credit to Schuyler, tons of credit to the booking and the commentary for putting it together that way, because it's just a perfect way you want to put over a match. You want to show the guy, the babyface, the people that everyone wants to see. You want to see, well, he can do it. He can win that kind of match. As you said, with the quick pinfall, he gets it within the time limit and boom. So I thought this was great business, great stuff. It's not a 4-star match. It's probably barely a 3-star match, but I think they did a great job.
Yeah. Then we got a CW Anderson promo. This is good business, you know, still pushing the angle and setting up the match for next for Battlecade. Any particular thoughts here?
No, I mean, just another super real, believable promo from CW Anderson and building up to a big-time match. So, hey, good stuff.
Yeah, and then we got Dirty Daddy versus Ethan Sharp. Again, another good, solid, you know, good storytelling match. Sharp is working over the neck. Dirty Daddy's selling it. We have Kane Justice on commentary, and he gets the winner of this match. So I liked all of that, and I like Justice's little. I liked him. I really liked him on commentary. I thought he did a lot to further the feud and the angle of what they're doing here. What were your thoughts overall here?
I thought the match was a little bit too good to be getting overshadowed, kind of in the way that it was, and I think that unfortunately it's not a bad thing. It's kind of like an embarrassment of riches in that I thought that, as you said, I mean, Sharp, I think Sharp's getting a lot better as being a serious character.
Yeah.
And so him and Dirty Daddy having what's more of a serious match. And I thought that Kane Justice on commentary was kind of overshadowing the match. Uh-huh. And I mean, and that's good in that it's building up to the big match, but I feel like, God, I was enjoying the match in the ring a little bit too much to feel like it's an afterthought match. So, again, as I said, it's kind of a problem you want to have. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's a good thing, but that would be my only negative of it. And yeah, I thought Sharp was great here playing heel and working on top. Daddy's selling for him. And I'm kind of hoping that Kane Justice does win the title, though, because I think this Dirty Daddy Rising Generation League championship reign is not – I don't think it's doing much, honestly. And I think he could move on to the tag team with Snooty Fox and maybe – kind of reinvigorate his character and maybe not have to do so much of the working, because I think he's good at the selling, but I think having Snooty Fox as his hot tag might help make his matches a little bit more enjoyable.
Very good point. And so, then we go to CWF Battle. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. What now?
No, go ahead. Go. That was it.
Okay. Then we move over to CWF Battlecade Event Center. I love this. Yeah, I thought this was well done. And then all of a sudden, somehow Matty De Niro promo interrupts the proceedings. It's like his, I mean, he personally didn't interrupt it, but it, like, his radio waves interrupted it. And I absolutely loved him. I thought he was a great character right here. I've never seen the guy. And I obviously he explained his history with the company and just starts cutting promos on everybody. And I want to see him in White Mike. I thought he was awesome on what they did here. I thought this was really neat and felt really different, but in a good way. What were your thoughts here?
Yeah, it was like amazingly awkward in a super believable, like, this guy's just weird way.
Yeah.
That was like, yeah, super great. And I think he's kind of a comedy guy. He's really only worked on the Battlecade cards for the past like 3 or 4 years and not really anything else. So I'm guessing that's he's just kind of coming in for the big show. I mean, he might do something behind the scenes, but they just bring him out as like a fun, funny thing to pop the crowd for the big shows because everybody kind of likes him. Because obviously I think him and White Mike are going to just have a comedy gold match that I'm looking forward to for sure. And I do love that he's doing the it's an open challenge, but I'm also pretty much openly teasing that I'm going to wrestle White Mike.
Yeah,
so I just thought that was great.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree. I think him and White Mike can have a lot of fun working together. And then this leads us to Snooty Fox with the Sandwich Squad versus the Ugly Ducklings and who's that? Montana Quack instead of Montana Black. I had a lot of fun with the six man. I mean, I had nothing to complain about. Guys worked hard and had a lot of fun with it, and I had a lot of fun with it because they were having a lot of fun with it. What about you?
Yeah, this was a definite not. God, I'm trying to. I don't want to say popcorn match because I think that means you go get popcorn, but just like a fun, I just mean like a fun, good time match where it's like, yeah, like not insane amount of like intricate storytelling or even really intricate work, but I thought good stuff. You got the little heels trying to cut down the two big monsters. And then they've got the big men on their team who can come in and even the sides here and there, but realistically they can't, they just really can't get going against just this big team of hulking badasses. So I thought that was a lot of fun. I mean, obviously the Ugly Ducklings just ooze charisma, even without Colby Carino here. These two just so much charisma, so into the act, just great stuff. And then they're cheating and they got the coach helping them out and I just love it. And then that finish with, Snooty Fox catching Lance Lude up in like a powerbomb position and just launching him into the air to set up the power slam was really impressive. I mean, I know Lance Lude's not a big guy, but the way he sent him up and the way that he fluidly spun in the air and twisted into the right position, that was pretty damn impressive. So, yeah, I like this a lot. As I said, I think it's this is like your – I guess I would describe it like if you're at a house show or a dark match or whatever. It's like the pre-intermission main event. You know what I mean? It's the one that sends everybody happy going into, all right, now you go buy some merch and go to the bathroom, stretch your legs, and then we'll come back for the second half. That's this kind of match, and they did it perfectly.
I agreed. And then we move over to a Joshua Cutshaw interview. And I kind of liked him. He looked like he's trying to morph his character a little bit into a more sinister, evil type of character instead of I'm laughing at you character, really into a more of a hopefully a money character. What'd you make of the interview?
Yeah, I'm interested to see what it is. It seems like it's maybe a little bit mentally deranged, possibly loose cannon-esque kind of thing, which I think can definitely work well and can have some dynamic, interesting, you know, stories with that. So definitely something to see where it goes from here.
Exactly. And then we get the main event. Roy Wilkins, Chet Sterling. What a strong match. What'd you make of this, man?
Yeah, I think Roy Wilkins is just phenomenal as the grinding, slow-paced heel. And here he is looking for the leg holds, working over the leg pretty much the whole way through, which is interesting when you know that Chet Sterling has the concussion or whatever they're playing off from the pile driver with the neck. So he's working over the neck, but then he's also looking for different leg holds throughout and just really trying to take him apart. And I thought Chet Sterling selling from underneath really solid, but not, I don't think, quite at that next level of, like, top guy for selling-wise, but definitely good stuff. And then, eventually fires back with the comeback and able to take back over. I did like the coach kind of getting the cutting him off, pushing him off the top. I thought that that was done really well with the referee not noticing, and the cheating as they're he's pulling the towel in the figure four and just everything. I think Roy Wilkins just does such a great job of all the little details as a heel, and I really, really love him for that, essentially, for being able to be such a good heel at the minor details of getting heat.
Yeah, and I enjoyed him going after the leg and working it over and playing that narrative, and then you have Chet Sterling playing the ultimate babyface, you know, fighting and fighting and fighting. Eventually he does get that hot tag because he worked so hard for he finally makes his comeback. But I mean, he sold and sold and sold for Roy Wilkins, and it was really interesting. But once he was able to make his comeback, it was great, and got a quick flash pin, and I liked that because I thought this match kind of helped both people, where it helped Sterling because he got the win. But also helped Wilkins because he dominated a big time contender and should have won, but he slipped on the banana peel. I like that type of booking, and they executed it beautifully. What any final thoughts?
I think it was, they did such a great job. They protected the people who are going into big matches on the big show, and then finally, as you said, the main event is the two. Kind of two big match guys where you could say it could go either way, and they did such a great job of protecting both going into the big show too, so that they both still can have some momentum, you know, theoretically going into it. So just a great job, and I think next week we should be starting soon with the Battlecade episode, so I'm really excited to get started on seeing that stuff.
Exactly. But hey, let's take a break here, and we'll be right back.
Consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner, at least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and placetobenation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceNation.com, the only place to be in your...
Yes.
All right. Ready?
I'm ready.
All right. And we are back. And we're moving into NXT. And we have, it opens up with Billie Kay, Peyton Royce versus Daria, which ends up being Billie Kay versus Daria. Daria is pretty green. It really didn't click. I didn't really get over all that much to me. Having Daria having to work along, it wasn't even that long of a match, but enough where I felt like she got exposed a good bit. And overall, kind of disappointing because she never got her comeuppance in a way. She pretty much, she didn't get her revenge. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, I thought.
They're using this match as a way to call out Asuka, which I don't understand the connection at all, really, but maybe you do.
Yeah, I think the connection is just supposed to be that they kind of tried to use her in a match recently, I guess, and then so now she's trying to get her come. I don't really know what the connection. I guess just
maybe it's like they're saying, well, look, she's an MMA girl. That's the best tune up for Asuka in a way. I'm not sure if you can. Maybe I just don't think people. I don't think you need a setup girl for Asuka. That's all there is to it. I'm sorry. Go on.
Yeah, no, I think that's really mostly it. Is just that the idea that she's the, as you say, the setup girl or the kind of like, I guess you would say the contemporary. You could say, oh yeah, she's an MMA fighter, so that means that it's like Asuka, but she doesn't come across like a badass at all comparatively.
Yeah,
I think there's something there from when I saw her live. I think I could tell that she's
I saw her live in San Antonio. And I liked her a lot, but here I something was missing, and she happened to be tagging with what's her name from was on Divas, Mandy Rose. And I thought Mandy Rose had a lot of charisma and actually had a lot of presence, and I thought that helped maybe a little bit. I thought they both complemented each other really well, and Solo, it's a little different. I wasn't getting that vibe like I did from her live. I'm guessing that's kind of the same with you.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is I think when I saw her, she was in a match against Mandy Rose. So
okay.
It might be that her and Mandy Rose just have really good kind of charisma with each other in ring, even if they're or chemistry in ring with each other, even if it's against each other or as partners. So that is kind of interesting to think if that's what it is. But yeah, I think her striking didn't look great. Her charisma doesn't come through on camera yet, so it's very weird. And then I kind of liked the Aussie girls cheating and everything and the way that they did that, but there wasn't much to the match. And then their post-match promo just didn't ring true to me. It was a little bit too yelly. It just kind of old, like it come across like that bad 80s wrestler promo, like we're mad, we have to yell. Yeah. And it just really wasn't believable to me. And they don't come across tough at all, which maybe that's the idea that they're supposed to be paper lions. But I think if you're going to do that, you got to get me invested a little bit more first. And I'm not seeing that yet. It just felt like they're putting on a fake facade. They're just playing pro wrestler right now.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And then we got Authors of Pain versus, I can't remember their name, and we kind of get a shoot finish, it looks like, because we're reading from the spoilers. I thought Authors of Pain really hurt this guy, and they had to go, the ref had to protect him because the Authors of Pain were trying to hook on their finish. What do you think? That was a shoot finish, right?
I hadn't heard anything about that, but it seemed like it because it ended pretty abruptly and it didn't really make any sense. So it was kind of.
And then if you see, they even when they were doing their promo, they tied it. They did the angle was tight, so you weren't seeing the doctor work on the injured guy. Because if they wanted to show him getting hurt, I don't think that hurts the Author of Pain. Then you stop the match because they can't go on. This felt more real as opposed to trying to build up the Authors of Pain at big badasses. Don't you think? Or.
Yeah, no, you're probably right there, probably right on the money with that, actually, because that's definitely what it felt like. It just felt like something wrong, and I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, is it really a shock that these big kind of ex-MMA fighter guys who are just giant crowbars that are green as grass are hurting people? Yeah. You know, I mean,
no,
shit.
No, yeah, not at all, yeah.
But,
I mean, that finish, I mean, throwing people against each other, I mean, you can't protect them. I mean, I'm more of an old school. I mean, who knows? I'm an old school wrestling guy. Yeah, there was injuries in old school wrestling, but there was a lot more protecting of your body. To me, there's a lot of I think they work it a little too closely, and that finishing run when you throw one person up against another person's back, you can't protect each other. You're gonna have to. That's a legit. That's like running into a wall, essentially, isn't it?
It's, I mean, in some ways it's worse because a wall, at least you would assume, is flat. Yeah. And that's the thing I'm hearing about, you know, stuff like when Balor got hurt, when Sting got hurt, with the kind of awkward powerbomb into whatever. It's you're powerbombing a guy into a surface that's not flat. And that was the whole point of wrestling, is that we're taking flat back bumps so that you don't get hurt. And now they're doing it on, you know, on surfaces that aren't flat. They're not protecting the guys. You're totally right. And yeah, it's just like, it's kind of an odd move to land. And you can't, again, I mean, these guys are not super skilled, you know, workers who have been doing this for years and years. Yeah. They're not taking care of these guys, and it's kind of super dangerous, and it's a risky move to be making. But hey, it's Triple H's baby, and everyone, you know, all hails, so it's not a big deal. He can, you know, he can let these two gigantic crowbars just kill everyone, and we just all turn a blind eye to it, right?
Yeah, we won't care, because he'll go out and throw in Roddy Strong or Nakamura or Samoa Joe and make everyone swoon over him. You know, I think he's more Eric Bischoff than he is Vince McMahon, since he's spending all Vince's money. But not to big contracts, but he's spending money to get just good workers in there. Then we got the Asuka promo, and you know, whatever, but we have Nikki Cross in the background, who to me is the only one who's really stood out in the whole entire Sanity group, if you ask me. But whatever, still, this is like weird. What you make of it?
I loved it, honestly, because it's like, it's the complete opposite of what I was saying about the Aussie girls, where they felt like they're playing pro wrestler. Like, she just pops into frame looking creepy as hell and seems legit scary, and I was just like, that's awesome. But it kind of sucks, because that's just the tease, and the match is the other girls, you know? So it's kind of like, well, when are we getting the Nikki Cross match? Because I'm into it. I'm excited to see that match.
Let's talk about Nikki Cross. Do you feel Sanity's gotten over, or do you feel Nikki Cross has gotten over?
Nikki Cross is the only one that's gotten over, and it sucks, because I think Alexander Wolf is a fantastic worker. I was a fan of him from WXW, and you know, Sawyer Fulton getting injured sucks also, because he's a guy who I thought had potential, but just keeps getting derailed. Originally, it was the tag team that kind of did the stutter stop breakup thing that just kind of kills a lot of people in NXT early on. And then now this kind of gets taken out with the injury again. He's switched looks a lot. Eric Young feels like they're treating him like he's something in between a wrestler and a manager. They're not treating him like he's a full-time worker. So that's weird and not really helping. And yeah, the only one who comes across like a viable threat for their division and someone to be taken seriously is Nikki Cross. And that's a lot of that has to do with the fact that she's coming in there and interrupting matches that are men's matches and being the deciding factor. Like last week when I talked about when she jumped Ty Dillinger from behind after the rest of Sanity couldn't even, you know, fucking sniff his jock or something. He fights off everybody and then gets jumped from behind by her. It kind of puts her over as the star of the group and the only one to be taken seriously. So it is kind of interesting in that regard, because it doesn't seem like that was the point of the group at all, but it seems to be working.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you completely. Then we got a video package for the main event where they highlight each guy. So I thought this was well done. And then we got the main event. What were your thoughts on the main event?
Lots of fun. I'm hearing Trask over at Wrestling With Words say that it's easy top 100 match of 2016, and I was telling him to calm the fuck down, because it was lots of fun, had a cool story, but I don't think it was anywhere near that great. I thought Roddy looked phenomenal, but what do you expect? It's Roddy.
I thought Roddy was the glue. If it wasn't for Roddy carrying this thing, this could have turned into something a lot different. Let's put it that way, okay? He was the glue that held this freaking ship together. Let me be perfectly honest. But okay, go on, though.
Yeah, no, and Roddy was phenomenal in here, but he's just... I mean, it's Roddy Strong. It's not saying much. I think Roddy Strong was pretty easily the, you know, wrestler of the year 2015. I can hear arguments about AJ Styles, but I mean, to me, Roddy was the guy. And then I think he even had a phenomenal 2016, even with disappearing halfway through the year to go to NXT. And now he's kind of getting his bearings. I think he's being allowed to be Roddy here. And he looked great. I thought that Almas looked really good. I thought it was kind of weird having him go out first, though. I didn't understand why you would end up with the two baby faces, kind of. I couldn't even really tell what the alignment was supposed to be. Like,
I thought it was three heels and Dillinger.
That's what I was kind of thinking too, but it felt a little bit like Roddy was aligned as a face, especially in the start, because I liked
who
the...
Who do you team up with in the tournament?
With Austin Aries, who's obviously a heel, but now Aries is like instantly gone, so I don't know. Right. I mean, I think you're right, but he felt tweener babyface here, and what they did when they opened the match, I thought
he didn't work heel. I don't think he worked heel. But I think the people consider him a heel.
Right. And the opening match bit where Rude tried to powder to the floor, which is like a kind of an old school, what's a heel going to do in a multi-man match? But then he gets kind of blindsided from both sides by Ty and Roddy, I thought was a thing that kind of showed that alignment. You know what I mean? That Roddy and Ty are teaming up to take on the heel who's trying to get out of the fight. But I can also see that you say, well, Roddy's just a fighting heel. Like, he's not the kind of heel that tries to back down from a fight. He likes to fight. So I can see it going both ways, but I just thought it was interesting because Almas, I think, was the most pure, you know, he's a heel guy. So why you get rid of him first?
Rude is a heel.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, other than Rude, who's winning. So I would have liked to have had a 2-on-1 heels on Dillinger, and then from there, but then you have to get rid of Roddy early on, and that kind of probably ruins the match too. So
yeah,
you know, maybe the way they went with it was good, but I just thought it was interesting having Almas go up first. And yeah, Roddy was really the star of the match, but I mean, the star of the match work wise I think he held it together as a ring general, but you know, Bobby Roode was put over, huge big deal going into the title match. So I just thought, again, I think this is another one where I could see maybe 3-star match for it overall, but really important for telling the story and building up to the big match coming down the line. So another one where I just think, like, the TV, when it's booked well and you have solid matches, they don't all have to be blow away. That's really what I'm looking for in a TV product. I don't know if, you know, if that's what everybody's looking for, but I know that's what I'm looking for.
That's what I'm looking for here. I'm watching them building to their specials, which are about 4 times a year. And so I liked the character development. I liked seeing the improvement on some of the talent. And then I liked to see something like this, which I thought was really well done. I liked it a little bit more than you. I gave it 3 3/4, but it's still not in the top 100 matches this year. I liked how Rude clearly has that it aura about him. And it was funny. I was watching a Collider video where they were having they call it the Schmodown, and they were having a Star Wars trivia contest, and they happened to have I forget the guy's name, but he also had Freddie Prinze Jr., who voices one of the cartoon Jedis in Star Wars Rebels, and Sam Witwer was the other one, who also voices Darth Maul in the cartoon, versus two of the guys. And Freddie Prinze Jr. used to be on the WWE writing committee, and what do they come out to? Gloria. Because it's like super over right now, and I thought that was a nice little shout out to Freddie Prinze Jr.'s tenure on the WWE writing committee, I saw it there. I thought that was cool. I thought the match was all action. I thought, again, like I said earlier, Strong was the one. He was the straw that stirred the drink here. He was the glue, and I loved seeing Almas's elbow strikes. I thought that was a really neat offensive choice, and they looked really good. But the key of everything that was about this show, I thought was strong, and it was building to future things. And now we know where we're heading. We're going to get Rude and Nakamura at the NXT in San Antonio, which I have tickets for. I'm kind of curious on how they're going to work this. It feels like a styles clash on paper, but both guys are pros, so I'm sure we'll get a good match. Do you think you'll get a good match out of Nak and Rude?
Oh, no question. But it really depends on what you're expecting. Because as I said, when I saw Rude versus Ibushi, it was not, you know, that work rate New Japan match that you might think it would be. But I think that's a pretty fair comparison, honestly, because I think Ibushi can do everything Nak can do and better, but he might not have the same intuition and instinct that Nakamura does. But here's the thing, both guys can turn it up. I mean, Rude used to be a work rate guy not too long ago, honestly.
That was what's funny. It was like some guys, I forget who it was, I was on the Observer, it was our boy Blizzard Acolyte was saying how I guess the boys over on Voices of Wrestling think Rude is all gimmick. Well, me and Johnny were like, we think he's a good worker. And so he wanted to set up a debate between the four of us. Of course, it's never going to happen. We've seen We've seen them avoid Dylan enough times about debating. And then the last thing, one of the least things I want to talk about is Bobby Roode and work rate in the same sentence. So we have that working against us also. But he's a totally different worker now than what he was in TNA.
Yeah, no, but I mean, you know, in some ways, yes.
Yeah, but when he was part of Beer Money, he was a go-go type of worker.
He carried the work for that group. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He carried the workload for Beer Money, but then when he broke out as a heel, he was a little bit, he was more like this with the It Factor and all that. So, I mean, realistically, I think that he can go. Nakamura can still go. We've seen it even just recently.
Yeah.
So I think that these guys are going to do what they need to do. I think that it's going to be one of those matches where in the building it's 5 stars and on tape it's maybe, 4 star. But
right.
At the same time, I could see them blowing it out of the water and just having a phenomenal match. So it's really going to depend. But it's a match that, if I was you and I had tickets, I'd be getting, really excited for it, because I think that this has nothing but potential, honestly, written all over it.
Yeah, and I like how the one thing that people don't, when discussing Roode and his work, people don't realize how smart a worker he is. Because, like, in this match, he didn't do anything incredible, but what he did was his work matched his character, which was an opportunistic. Well, he was an opportunist, and that's what we saw him. He picked his spots, and he'd hit it here and there. He'd pick his moments and dominate for a little bit. But it was all about his character, because it was all driven, character driven, and a lot of people don't understand that as part of your wrestler. It's not about all the high spots and this and that you do, but if you have a wrestling character and it's established, you're able to have so much more fun because you're able to do certain different things with your character while wrestling, and that's what I think Bobby Roode is at this level at this point in his career.
Oh yeah, and it's. I mean, when it comes down to it, it's what wrestling is all about. I love all the cool spots and everything, but if I wanted to see flips, you can watch gymnastics. If you want to see people getting punched, you can watch boxing. You know what I mean? If you want to see submission, there's grappling. In fact, Flow Sports is going to do Matt Riddle versus Jeff Cobb in a shoot grappling competition.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Okay. Let's talk about that right quick. who are you going with?
I mean, I don't know the exact rules for – I think it's submission grappling, right?
Oh, is it? Okay, that was amateur grappling.
So I think I have to give it to Riddle, because I think he's at least brown belt in jiu-jitsu, while Cobb essentially is amateur background. So I don't know Cobb's submission game that well. But I think if it was straight up just amateur, obviously I give it to the Olympian. I mean,
Cobb's a load to move, man. He's a strong man.
That's for sure, too.
I got to look at it. Yeah, it's Chael Sonnen and... as group, Grappling Underground or whatever the hell
submission.
You call it. Submission Underground.
Yeah.
And stuff. So, I the size, man, I think that's a lot for, but I mean, size won't matter if Riddle gets him in a spot where he's uncomfortable. But I think Cobb's good enough. I think his ground game might even just fuck up Riddle's submission game. I mean, we've seen it. We've seen guys, physical specimens who have really great ground game. But if it's submission, then Riddle has an advantage that Cobb doesn't have, because Cobb's not a submission guy. He's a grappler. But gosh, I want to see it. Don't you?
Oh yeah. And if someone teaches Cobb a couple leg, arm, and choke holds, and he can defend, takedowns so well, and his grappling game is so good, then I think it might just come down to, Riddle can't get anything on him. But my thing is just what submissions does he know? Because that's the top thing that I think people don't even understand, is just how hard it is to apply these submission holds a lot of times. I mean, people talk about those fights where they're saying I think it was, what was it, Kimbo and Shamrock, where they said they thought it was worked because it was so hard. He had him in the choke and he wasn't going out. And it's like, you don't even realize how hard it is to put a choke on. Like, you think even a choke is easy, but it's not. It's tough to put a choke on. So it really is going to depend on if Cobb has any submission game, but it's interesting too.
I don't think submission is actually a part of it at all. It says here, Riddle said on his pocket, and Cobb are generally scheduled for a grappling match. So I think that's just based on points.
If it's based on points, I see. The thing is that Submission Underground, the place that's doing it, which is Chael Sonnen's group, is Submission Grappling. So that's why I would assume. But yeah, if they're doing it as
I can't imagine Lucha Underground allowing Cobb under contract to work where he could actually tear get hurt.
That's a good point.
In a submission. I think it's straight up grappling.
Okay, so if it's straight up grappling, then I give it to Cobb 100%. I'm sorry, yeah. But Riddle's good, but Cobb is just too big, and he's a more skilled grappler, so.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, submission is different. I mean, a whole different mentality, too. But yeah, Cobb's a big man. Cobb's a strong man. And yeah, he's a load to work move. I don't think Riddle has the strength. I mean, I think Cobb has him by like 80 pounds, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, probably at least. There ain't no way that Cobb is making that 205 live.
Yeah, no. Exactly. Okay, man, that's NXT. Let's take our final break. And when we come back, we are going to be busting out our top 20 of the A-list of the Observer Awards. I went with my top 3 picks in each category.
Yes, me too.
Okay, cool. All right, man, we'll be back. We'll be coming back with that doozy of a list.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
All right, man, and we're back. It's Observer Awards time. Man, these things are they used to be highly debated and getting talked about. It's not as much anymore, but it's fun to do. And I try to turn one in most of the time. Sometimes I just run out of steam and I'm like, screw it. Because the year has been bad, but I think we've had a lot of different promotions, got a lot of different talent, got a lot of different perspectives, and I think there's a lot of wrestling to like this year. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, as I was looking through the list, I mean, there was a couple things that were just really tough for me to pick. I mean, not just you know, so many guys that could be in it, and some of the stuff with the Observer Awards is just that it's a little, I hate to say it, but there's some stuff that's a little outdated, honestly, and the wording is awkward. But, and there's so many other options too, kind of now, as there's like other people who do awards, but essentially everybody's.
The fact that there's not a podcast of the year award, I mean, obviously we wouldn't have been nominated or anything because, you know, it'd be like Stone Cold or Jericho or what have you, you know what I'm saying? You think that would be on there now as opposed to something, you know, but whatever, best manager.
Or like book. There's book of the year or something. I mean, realistically, the wrestling book market has died down.
There's only a handful of books released every year, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, but when it comes down to it, though, like everybody is really just aping Dave Meltzer. So if you're doing awards on your wrestling site, you know you're just knocking off the Observer Awards. So, you know, you got to pay homage to the guy who kind of created everything.
Yep, it's true. All right, man, let's start it off. Who did you pick for the Luthez Ric Flair Award?
So this is a tough one for me because you have to add in the kind of drawing side of things. And I just, number one, I don't pay attention to companies that you could say legitimately draw. That's just kind of my thing. And then the other part of it is, like, I don't really keep track of drawing, but, I mean, do you want me to go 3-1 or you want me to go 1-3? What do you think?
Go 3-1, I guess.
All right. So number 3, I put Matt Hardy. He's the only guy who's got anyone paying any attention to TNA. The in-ring aspect of it isn't great, but honestly, the stuff that they're doing with the total non-stop deletion and all that stuff is just really kind of, it works for what it is, which is, like, not really wrestling, but it's fantastic. It's the only thing getting people paying attention, so went with that. Number 2 was Tetsuya Naito. The guy is just so over that he kind of forced New Japan's hand and made them make him the champion and do all this stuff and really kind of resurrected the company when I think it was really kind of lulling. I couldn't imagine what this year looked like without Naito getting as over as he did for that middle part of the year if they had just kept the belt on Okada or something, or he just went back to feuding with Makabe or Tanahashi or something, that would have completely sucked. So that Naito was really important there. And then the number one is the, what is he, the face that runs the place or the champ that runs the camp? AJ Styles. The guy is just the fucking man in WWE, as it was supposed to be that SmackDown was John Cena's brand and it became AJ Styles' brand. So, I mean, how do you argue with that?
All good picks. All good picks. My number third pick are the Okada. I felt he had a longer run with the belt. He's still going to be main eventing the Tokyo Dome on January 4th. He main evented the one this year. I mean, New Japan did pretty solid business again this year. You can't complain about the guy as the ace of the company right now. My second pick, I went with AJ Styles. Again, just like you said, it was Cena's brand. But he's off doing movies and comedies and commercials and the ESPYs and Good Morning America and whatever else is there to do under the sun. AJ Styles took a brand who, on paper, looked a lot worse than what Raw has, and he's done a damn good job as champ. He's a convincing champion. He's gone out night after night, had kick-ass matches, and has been on one of the more entertaining television shows that WWE has produced in a long, long, long time. My number one is a little controversial. I didn't have anyone really who just jumped out at me. So I went with Charlotte Flair. I feel she's elevated the women's title into something important. We saw her main event Hell in the Cell. She's been in the semi-main, we've seen her main event Raw. Her character work has been incredible, where she's a really convincing promo. She's definitely coffee talk. I mean, like a water cooler talk, important. And she's kind of become this generation's Ric Flair for the women's. I mean, everyone penciled Sasha Banks as going to be the one who carried this women's division, and Charlotte kind of went out and took that mantle from her and became a better promo than Sasha. It seemed she carries herself like a champion, and she's really elevated that title, and she's had great matches on pay-per-view, undefeated on pay-per-view. Killer matches with Sasha. We've seen her at the four-way at Mania. She was part of having the best match at WrestleMania. But what she's totally reconned the whole entire history of women's wrestling, where now it's not to TNA, it's not bikini, it's not mud wrestling. It's legitimate, and they've gotten it over to where it means something for the company. So for that, I'm going, and she's been the face of it and spearheaded it. Could someone have done it better? Could someone have done it if it wasn't Charlotte? Yeah, but I think having the pedigree with her father helped a lot with that transition. And I felt her, what she did as a character was incredible. And so I went with Charlotte Flair as my Ric Flair Luthez Award. Most outstanding. I'll open this one up. My number three was Trevor Lee. Best acting champion on paper right now. Had great matches on CWF Mid-Atlantic with a variety of opponents. Most of them don't have much name value outside of North Carolina, truth be told. But he's been able to do that. Then he can go out to PWG and do a spot fest. He can come out to Wrestle Circus and job on the opening match. He's a guy you can put up and down the card and have a good match, and he can do whatever you ask from him on the card. I thought his where he was really, really shine was in the CWF Mid-Atlantic, and he was just incredible, having incredible matches. My number two, Zack Sabre Jr. I akin him to like the old NWA champion. He'd go into a territory and have a great match with the best babyface or the best heel in the company, and he was doing it with everybody all over the place. Yeah, he got a little backlash towards because he didn't impress as much as he could have at the Cruiserweight show, But I still thought he worked well enough where I felt the backlash seemed like people were looking for that backlash. The guy just had great match after great match after great match on all these different continents, from Europe to the United States, and then everywhere in between, from Ospreay to AJ to Cedric Alexander to Sammy Guevara to Chris Hero to whoever, to Matt Riddle. Just great match after great match after great match. He had one of Colt Cabana's best matches this year. The guy is everything you want out of a touring champion. He'd come in and elevate the guy, and when he left, the guy seemed like he was on a bigger, he was a bigger star coming out of it. But man, the most outstanding wrestler has got to be Chris Hero. By far the best tournament wrestler of the year. Yeah, and it was in so many great tournaments. Scenic City Invitational, the PWG, the Progress, just so many stuff. IW Mid-South tournament. I mean, just so many. He was just the guy. He was the glue that held all these tournaments together. Had great match after great match after great match. If Chris Hero, I mean, I think the guy must have had more four-star matches than anybody on paper this year. He was the master from all different, going in and getting to work so many different types of people with so many different styles. The guy was just super consistent and had a great year. That's why he's my number one. What about you?
My number three is Zack Sabre Jr., essentially for all the same reasons that you just said. Guy is just so good, and I think lots of intricate, detailed storytelling in his work. And if you want to hear kind of more in-depth breakdown of him, I'd say definitely go hop over to the Psychology is Dead, because Quentin is a big proponent of Zack Sabre Jr. My number two is Chris Hero. I think he's been amazing this year. And the only thing that keeps him out of the number one spot is just the fact that Chris Hero is Chris Hero everywhere, having Chris Hero matches. And for me, I think my most outstanding wrestler is a guy who I think was just as good as Chris Hero, had just as many good matches, but also worked so many different styles and could fill any spot on any card and have a great match no matter what. So my number one guy was Trevor Lee. I just think the guy this year was amazing at playing the champion. He was also amazing at playing the spot guy, playing heel in PWG, playing spot monkey in TNA. But yeah, the crux of his argument is the CWF title run, where he is Ric Flair, using, you know, the mixture of technical work so that he stands out the most out of anyone as being the best technical wrestler there, and the champion, the Iron Man. So I just think, honestly, if you're just talking about raw talent, Chris Hero this year was amazing, but he didn't get a chance to flex his muscles and show everything off that he could as much, because he was essentially working the same Chris Hero match and had to be that same presence Chris Hero everywhere. And unfortunately, that's just kind of what I had to grade him off of. That still doesn't change the fact that I think 2016 Chris Hero probably goes down in history as one of the greatest years that a wrestler's ever had.
Agreed. What's when we kick it off? Where do you stand on Feud of the Year?
Okay, awesome. You skipped the box office draw as well.
I dropped it because it was because it combined MMA into it.
You know why I drop it? And this is the thing, and I just think it's so. This is, like I said, one of the things that's weird about the Observer Awards. It's not an opinion. Like, it's so weird to me that you vote on best box office draw when it comes down to numbers. And you could prove who's the best box office draw, so why am I voting my opinion? Okay, so Feud of the Year, I went number three, Callahan versus Pentagon. I thought that Sami Callahan versus Pentagon Jr. in AAW was a great feud that had a lot of great matches and great promos mixed in. It helped make Pentagon Jr. come across as a big-time star in America, not just the guy who happens to be popular from Lucha Underground, but a guy that could draw houses in America. And I think a lot of that came from being able to cut promos, being able to be treated as the guy in AAW and a big deal. I thought Sammy really shined playing up his character and really came across like a really hateable heel. And again, like I said, they delivered in ring. My number two, I went with Naito versus Okada in New Japan. I thought that, again, just Naito kind of being ungovernable and being an asshole and just throwing fits everywhere and throwing the title around and just all that charisma, and Okada being essentially the face of the company guy and watching as Naito just destroys all of his chaos friends as he defends the title against Goto and Ishii, and then finally Okada comes in and wins it, I think was just great all the way through. And my number one feud of the year was Charlotte Flair versus Sasha Banks. I think, again, you talked about Charlotte in the Flair Thez Award. I think it was totally right and totally deserved. I think only right now people are starting to complain that the feud has been going on a little bit too long, but realistically, we're like through almost the entire year of them feuding, and it's finally getting stale. Like, people are finally complaining about it, which is really impressive to think that they were able to not just drag it out, but have phenomenal matches the whole way through with a lot of good storytelling. Again, good promos back and forth. But really, when it comes down to it, the reason why this is feud of the year is just the great matches that these two have been having. Headlining pay-per-views, if it wasn't the best, it's at least in the top two or three matches at WrestleMania. To me, I still think that three-way at WrestleMania involving them was the best match on the show. So it's just like a huge deal what these girls did this year and just had a phenomenal feud.
Good stuff. Number three, I went with Styles versus Cena. I mean, this thing had more juice to it, more electricity than anything I've seen in, like, since probably Cena versus The Rock at WrestleMania, the first WrestleMania years ago. This came across as a true dream match. And you know what? There's still plenty of juice in that feud because it really... they only had really two singles matches, and then we had that three-way. There's still a lot of juice left in this feud, and not only that, but we were getting good six-man tags in this feud. This is when Cena, which was teaming with Enzo and Cass, or New Day, and you'd see Styles with the Bullet Club. With Anderson and Gallows, so we were having fun six-mans on Raw at the time. And this is the feud that really kick-started the Raw brand and really showed them how awesome they were. So I went Styles Cena number three. Number two, I went with the Revival versus DIY. Love the feud. Love the angles. These guys had big matches on the two specials, and then they were tearing it down. I mean, I saw one live and they tore it down, and all the reports were saying they were having match of the year, low level match of the year contenders on just regular house shows. Just a great work rate feud and a throwback to 80s style wrestling with the Revivals as kind of like the Andersons and DIY as like a different type of Rock and Roll Express in a way. And my fear of the year, couldn't believe I put it down, but I was really entertained by this feud. I went with Miz versus Ziggler.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's a good one, man.
Yeah. I thought going into SmackDown, Dolph Ziggler was about as dead as a character as you possibly could be. The Miz, he became a character, almost a comedy guy. I mean, he was coming off that tag team with, what's his name? I can't remember right now.
Where was Sandow?
Miz Dow. And then all of a sudden, man, at Mania, the guy still had heat. Then you put him with his wife. Then you put him in a split the brand up, and Miz is on fire. And then it all clicked on that Talking Smack where Miz cut the promo of a lifetime. And this feud, the feud where the loser leave town, where it's supposed to culminate, it had more heat, and people started believing in Ziggler, who was about as dead of a character as we've had in a long time, where they were just like, okay, but these guys took the ball and had a slam dunk. I thought this was an incredible feud. I thought Ziggler, he wasn't nearly at the level that Miz was. I thought Miz carried this feud, but I thought Ziggler was a good foil to the Miz and Maurice. And I thought they had great chemistry. The one match was incredible, but they also had other good matches in this feud. Whoever would have thought these guys were going to bust out on a pay-per-view and have a 4.5-star match? I mean, they should have gone on last on that show, and people would have been talking about that show a lot more. I just can't. I'm really more impressed because the feud came out of nowhere on a pair of dead acts, and they just turned the whole entire company on their ear. And Miz is definitely a big time player, and Ziggler still has a lot of juice left on the roster. Awesome feud. Tag team of the year. Where do you stand on this?
Number three, I went for Sandwich Squad. I think sometimes they can be a little sloppy, but they play their roles phenomenally. They've really come into their own as a team over this year, and I just thought that they've been really great on CWF the whole way through. Number two, I went with Red Dragon, just because I don't think that there's a team that's as crisp as them on offense. Their stuff just always looks amazing. It looks really elegant and has a lot of finesse, but also looks like it kills, and they're just taking people apart.
Do you feel they weren't a team long enough this year?
I went back over and just saw how many tag team matches they really worked this year, and I know that they both got focused on singles, but they still had a surprisingly large number of tag team matches this year. So I was like, you know what? They actually did. I mean, they weren't focused as much as a tag team in ROH, but in New Japan, they were still tagging very regularly. So it just kind of, I was like, you know what? I think that they're still probably my second favorite tag team. And then number one, I don't think there's much of a question. It's got to be the Revival. These guys are just phenomenal as a tag team. Wink and a nod to, you know, the nostalgia, the wrestling that got me into wrestling, but also updated to really not feel out of place in 2016. And then how do you argue with their promo game? I mean, these guys came across like they were bland, good workers. I remember when they were the Mechanics. Further back than that, it was like, oh yeah, these guys are good in ring, but there's nothing more to them. And Jesus Christ, if they're not probably the most money act in NXT, except for, you know, Nakamura, maybe, or Samoa Joe. I mean, these guys, their promo game is tight. Their matches all tell phenomenal stories. So I don't, as I said, I don't think that there's really much of a question when it comes to tag team of the year.
Yep, I'm with you. I went number three on with New Day. Even though I feel they're a stale act now, for the most of the year they were over, and people started caring about the tag team division because of New Day. They started getting more teams, but this is the most energized the tag team division has felt in years in the WWF or WWE, and I give New Day a lot of the credit for that. Number two, I went with the Young Bucks. To me, tag team is getting more and more dead each and every year. I felt this was a pretty weak year for tag teams besides the Revival and maybe Young Bucks. My number one was the Revival. The Young Bucks just had enough to put them up number two, even though I hate the fact that they're baby faces who claim to be heels. But they had enough good matches where I just couldn't go against them at number two. But yeah, the Revival are just were just incredible. Incredible. For most improved, number three, and this might be a cheat, but he hadn't been working anywhere in like forever consistently. So I went with Brian Kendrick. Had a great run in the middle of the year at the tournament, and then he's been pretty solid on the Cruiserweight show. But did he really technically improve, or is this more of a push? But you know what? He hadn't been on the map in years for anybody. So for me, his name's out there, so he's improved. Number two, I went with Donovan Dijak. The guy who was just, you know, you just thought he was a big goof. When you get a chance to, especially Beyond, gave him the opportunity. I think, and he just took the ball and ran with it. And Beyond, him and Keith Lee, him and Brian Cage, him and whoever. He's had a lot of great matches in Beyond, and he's branched out in other places too. Don't get me wrong. Him and Keith Lee and Russell Circus had a hell of a match. He's had good matches in Ring of Honor, but when given the opportunity to go 17, 18 minutes, he's delivered for more than not, and really deserved. Really has improved a lot. And for my number one, I went with Charlotte Flair. Again, everyone thought it was Sasha Banks, but Charlotte was never a great promo. Now she is. She never exuded tons of charisma. Now she does. Her ring work improved a little bit. She understands more stuff, and her psychology is better. So overall, I think she's improved enough to where she became the ace of the division. And people aren't wondering what happened to Sasha. I mean, it's clear. Charlotte is the better worker, better heel, better package right now. And I felt she did that through hard work. And sometimes you see that when people hit the main roster. She was good in NXT, but I think she's even better now on the main roster as a total package and stuff. What about you? Where were your flies on these?
I'm just going to say Kendrick is actually a really great pick, because being someone who's out here in Southern California where he lives, I've probably seen him more over the lull period where no one else was seeing him. And honestly, it's an improvement by the fact that he gets it in a totally different way and is working this character stuff more, where he had never really done something like this, even on the indies. So that's a great pick. And kind of playing off that, I think for me, I looked at this and I was like, in ring, I mean, most improved in 2016. How do you argue in ring against there's so many guys like Matt Riddle who just wasn't even wrestling last year. Same with Leo Rush. So these guys are phenomenal. So I kind of went, I think, outside the box of how people normally look at this. And I was looking at more people who developed their abilities as characters and their abilities as being seen as a top level guy. So my number three, I went with Pete Dunne. I think he's a great worker, but I think in 2016, he became not just a great worker, but a great storyteller and a fantastic character and a guy who you could see main eventing shows anywhere. Number two, I went for Fred Yehi. Very similar, always really good, technically sound. But in 2016, he became a guy who has got his name out there everywhere and gets the crowd behind him and works super smart and doesn't have to kill himself. And number one is another one who's been going even longer and has been great even longer. And that was Becky Lynch. Again, probably seems like blasphemy because she's always been a phenomenal worker. Very good in ring. But in 2016, I think she put that character stuff together. I mean, working her promos and becoming the face of the women's division for SmackDown, I don't think anyone saw that coming. She's just like a really lovable, believable, awesome baby face. Another thing that's just like kind of what, when she showed up in NXT after having taken a lot of time off from wrestling, she was kind of awkward in her promos, obviously still great in ring, but you just didn't see it. And now she just exudes charisma and feels like a big deal. And so, yeah, I think Becky Lynch is the most improved in that regard, that she's gone from being just whatever to being a main event player.
We don't have that award here in the A-list, but she would have been my pick for best babyface in 2016.
Yeah, exactly. And for me, I just don't think that you see that in the end of 2015. I don't think people are predicting that Becky Lynch was going to be the best babyface of the year, you know?
Right. All right, man, let's move over to best on interviews.
Best on interviews, I went number three, Brad Attitude. Over the past few months, he's just really been goading at Trevor Lee and building up this feud that's a big deal. Number two, I went for Jay Briscoe. I just love the guy's promos no matter what. Always sells, always comes off real, chaotic, but on point at all times and gets the money. And then my number one promo of the year was Adam Cole. I just think the guy can deliver every kind of promo, always about the money, always stays on point. It can be scripted or it can be off the cuff, and I just think just an amazing promo. And I find it interesting because for me, I don't see a lot of really great promos in WWE anymore. It's like ROH has two of my top promo guys in it. So it's kind of like ROH is becoming the promo company as far as I see it.
Yeah, I went number three. I went with Christopher Daniels to go with our ROH theme. I thought that the promo he cut going into Ladder Wars was one of the best promos in years by anybody. I thought that was incredible. Didn't get enough play, but he's been a consistent promo all year around. Even after the Ladder War, he cut that great promo. I mean, he's especially right now, he's been on fire cutting promos, and I went in with him number three. Number two, people might find this shocking, but I went with Samoa Joe. He single-handedly carried Finn Balor in a feud and had to carry his end of the, had to carry both, because Finn is not a good talker. Joe had to carry the feud when they did that kind of like Lawler Dundee esque type of setting. It was Joe who carried that segment. He's currently feuding with Nakamura, whose English is not his first language. He carried that feud in on the stick. I thought, yeah, for me, Samoa Joe was incredible on carrying big time programs with his stick work. And there's been a lot of hate towards Joe, where they don't see him as a great worker anymore. He seems the same old, same old. If you're watching the week to week build, the guy's promo work has been incredible, and everything he says you believe. And to me, that's like one of the most important things about a promo is, do I believe what it am I? Do I want to? Either is he going to talk me into the building, or do I believe in what he's saying? Do I believe what he's selling me? And I believe anything that Samoa Joe is selling me. Again, best on interviews, I went with Miz. Again, a dead act, helped enhance so many people. Talking Smack has become must see TV. And a lot of it is because you know Miz is going to show up and cut a great promo. He's been on fire at a different level. His whole entire game is elevated. And I love the fact that Smart Marks are all, they hate him so much. And a lot of it's because of his interviews that they're convinced themselves he's not a good worker. And he's tearing it up and having great matches. Now we move over and into most charismatic. My three picks were number three, Matt Riddle. Number two, Pentagon Jr. And my last pick was Nakamura. And you could easily throw this in a blender, blend it up, spit it out, and it could have come out different ways, and I wouldn't have been angry. But I felt these three really were the most three charismatic guys in the wrestling today. Who were your three?
Very similar list, and you're spot on. My thing, what I was looking for as I was trying to pick it apart, was who's got that charisma that doesn't go with promo? Because if you're voting most charismatic, it's like, who's got that natural, people just like them even if they don't promo. So I went number three, Jack Gallagher. The guy just gets over everywhere. It's in-ring charisma. I mean, he's a good technical worker, but I mean, he gets over on his in-ring charisma. Number two, Nakamura, obviously, another guy that the crowd just loves no matter what. And number one, I went with Matt Riddle, because he's everybody's bro. It doesn't matter right. Who you are. I mean, I've heard so many people recently talk about how, oh, when I heard this ex-UFC fighter, always from Ultimate Fighter, and he's a wrestler, and then instantly once they saw him, they said, I like that guy. So he's just got that charisma that turns everybody 100 degrees, or 180 degrees on him instantly. So how do you vote against that guy?
Fair enough. Who are your three technical guys? Best technical wrestler?
I went number three, Zack Sabre Jr. Obviously, pretty self-explanatory. Number two, Kushida. Again, same thing. I think he's fucking great. And number one, because he fits my taste and he wrestles in a way where it's technical and I believe it, is Timothy Thatcher. Because I got to get him on here somewhere and I love the guy. So I like his style of technical wrestling the best.
All right. Fair enough. My three, I went with Kyle O'Reilly, number three. Jonathan Gresham, number two. Zack Sabre Jr., number one. Obviously, I'm a fan of the Zack Sabre Jr. Gresham feud. To me, Zack is like by far, I thought was aces above everybody else. But I thought Gresham and O'Reilly were just really great at having really strong technical matches. Best brawler. My three, number three, Steve Corino. That match with BJ Whitmer, I thought was awesome. A total bloodbath. Yeah, it might have only been one match, but it's hard. Brawling is not something that happens too often anymore. So I'm going with Corino. Number two, Mil Muertes. I thought he had a hell of a lot of great brawls in Lucha Underground. And the place is not set up for to have great brawls, but I thought Mill did it. Number one, Chris Hero, by far. No one. I mean, he's like the modern day. He's a modern day Stan Hansen. Just not without the bull rope and stuff. I mean, the guy delivers, biggest puncher and striker in wrestling right now. Yeah, strong man. I believe in him. I believe in him as the best brawler. What about you?
I went with number three. I think it's probably interesting to most people, but I went with Drew Gulak. His no holds barred and that circle of hate or whatever match with Thatcher, and just a guy who, even as a technical wrestler, he's a brawler. I think he technical wrestles as a brawler, so I really kind of think he's underrated in that style. He's always a roughneck. Number two, Mil Muertes as well. The guy is just phenomenal as a brawler, and that's what he does well. And number one, obviously, Chris Hero. His striking game, brawling people around the ring, playing bully asshole. I mean, come on. How do you go against Chris Hero there?
Agreed. Best flyer. Who are your three?
Number three, I went with Fenix. The guy is just phenomenal. Hits the craziest, coolest spots. Number two, Will Ospreay. Same thing. Guy's so good. And number one, the future of flight, King Ricochet. The guy is just so fucking smooth. Everything he does looks chaotic. It looks like it's completely practiced and acrobatic and amazing, but still comes across chaotic and dangerous, and like he's actually could hurt people. So, yeah, Ricochet, he's the fucking man.
Okay, I went number three, Ricochet. Number two, Dragon Lee. Number one, Will Ospreay. And I think what sold it for me on Will Ospreay was actually that spot in the three-way in the pay-per-view with Ring of Honor when he did that flip and landed on his feet.
Yeah.
I that just marks me out, and I think that put him over the edge, put him over the top for me. Most overrated. Number three, Cody Rhodes. The guy, I mean, he put on his little list, and you know, I don't want to bag on him where he's been bad, but it just seems like his style of wrestling feels better suited for like maybe the 80s or something. I just don't know what it is. He just doesn't connect with what he's doing in the modern era of wrestling. It doesn't seem like where he needs a strong heel, and there's not that many strong heels out there to be successful as a babyface. And I mean, it just hasn't transpired where he hasn't left the E like Galloway and have kick-ass matches, you know. Number two, Maccabe, terrible worker, most overrated piece of garbage. Him and Ishii, and every match they talk about him having great matches, he's just a dud. And my number one guy is Brock Lesnar. I really can't think of anything he's done this year which is can't miss wrestling. Yeah, he's had some good promos with Goldberg and stuff, but man, at WrestleMania he was disappointed with Ambrose. He jobbed at Goldberg immediately. I can't think of a really strong match he's had this year.
Yeah,
paying him all that money, that much money. I can't imagine anyone else being. It's just ridiculous. Yeah, most overrated. I mean, people are just shitting on Samoa Joe. How about Brock? Look in the mirror. Look at Brock Lesnar. That guy's been hiding all around this year. And the fucker failed the drug test. That doesn't apply for him in WWE, but it should. What about you?
So many good ones there, but let's go. Number three, I went with Hirooki Goto because he actually is getting title shots throughout the year.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one.
And was in the G1 final, so it just felt like, Jesus Christ, this guy's not very good. I mean, he's okay, but he just has no fucking heat.
Yeah.
Number two, I went with Sami Callihan. Honestly, just because AAW kept the title on him for so long and then gave it back to him again. I think he's good, but I don't think he warrants that level of push in a company that I like as much as AAW. And number one was your number three, Cody Rhodes. He is everywhere and they treat him like a big deal and he's winning all these titles, but he delivers, I mean, God, he delivers middle of the road, uninteresting, like Marty Scroll type matches. Like that's where he's at, and they treat him like he's the greatest wrestler on the planet. They act like he's Chris Hero, but he's, you know, he's Cody Rhodes, and geez.
Yep. All right, man. most underrated. Who are your three?
Perennially underrated Cesaro, number three. The guy should be the world champion of WWE forever, just if it was just based on skill and like being able to do everything in ring. Number two, Zach Gibson, soon to be the world's number one, though, so we don't have to worry about him being underrated for much longer. And my number one most underrated, he's so underrated that I forgot to put him on my technical wrestler list, even though I had him in my top 10 of overall wrestlers, and that's John Gresham. When you brought him up right now, I was like, what the fuck is wrong with me? But John Gresham is so goddamn good. I cannot believe that no one uses him consistently other than Beyond in a high-profile way. It's kind of a travesty,
criminal.
Honestly.
It really is. No, it's criminal. My most underrated, number three, Jonathan Gresham. Same feeling. Number two, because I think me and you are the only ones really pimping him hard online. People are now starting to drink the Kool-Aid on him a little bit. But Sammy Guevara, I mean, he's so underrated, no one knows who the hell he is. I mean, no one talks about him online. I mean, it's like the guy's having great match after great matches in Texas. I've seen so many live performances from him. I think I've seen him live 7 or 8 times, and no match has been less than 3.25, 3.5 stars, up to 4.5 stars. I mean, so the guy's tearing it up. Have you seen the Cody Rhodes match online yet?
Yeah, I just watched that. It was so good until that stupid-ass finish, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that's been Cody's best match since he's joined the Indies. I thought he had Colt Cabana's best in a match here at Wrestle Circus last week. So he's not only is he having good matches, he's not like he's just having good matches with great workers. He's having matches with guys who, I mean, who are Cody Rhodes, I mean, struggled with Chris Hero to have a good match, you know?
It's true.
And Chris Hero, I mean, we have him 1-2. That says a lot. I mean, the guy, no one knows who in hell he is. I think I'm glad to see Brian Cage tweeting out about him today, how he wants to work with him. Cage, he's representing the Texas boys. He wants another match with Keith Lee, and Sammy Guevara was repped. He had some other guys, but I think that's really cool, Cage. And my number one was Zach Gibson. Guy should be the ace of progress. I mean, right now he feels like a pick where he's going to be staying around for a little bit. Might as well put the belt on him. And the guy has great matches, really strong matches. And he just, the guy sometimes, he's not as pushed nearly as well as he is.
Yeah, no. I mean, he should easily be top of the card guy everywhere.
Yep. All right. Promotion of the year. Number three, I went with New Japan Pro Wrestling. Number two, I went with NXT. My number one, I went with Evolve. I thought they were having great matches after great matches, and then signing the deal with Flow Slam. Without Evolve, Flow Slam, I don't think, wouldn't have nearly the interest, because people view Evolve as like the indie, really. I think Evolve and PWG, and obviously PWG isn't going to be signing with these type of companies, so I think by proxy, Evolve is the number one indie promotion in the world right now, and I thought they had terrific show after terrific show after terrific show. It started off at Mania Weekend, where they had so many great matches, and I don't think they ever slowed down. They might have had some shows that were in the thumbs in the middle, but nothing that was actively bad that I can recall. I went with Evolve as my promotion of the year. What were your three?
Number three, I think the guys who picked up, as you were talking about PWG, they picked up the PWG model and in some ways do it better than PWG did in 2016. I went with AAW, super indie that really can hit all the kind of facets of wrestling on each show, well-balanced cards. There's some stinkers, though. They've had some tough shows and some tough matches, but I think all in all, as a promotion, I really appreciate them. Number two, CWF Mid-Atlantic. The booking is fantastic. If you look at the cards and the shows and you think about them as full shows rather than just the TV show that you end up watching, they're putting on some of the best shows going with just the match quality. And yeah, the booking, the commentary, everything about it's so great, and it's exactly kind of what I want out of a wrestling show. And then number one is Evolve, because the same shit that you said. I mean, good God, they're putting on great shows.
But is it a weekly show?
What? Evolve?
Evolve?
No.
I thought, what are we at?
Promotion of the year.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was utterly looking at my next one. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, Evolve is just amazing. Obviously, you already talked about it.
Yep, all right. Best weekly show.
All right, best weekly show. I went number three, WXW Shotgun. Not getting enough love out there every week. They put out a free show on YouTube and then Shotgun Plus on the Vimeo Now site, and they're always having great, great matches and good storytelling and just fantastic. It's kind of insulated so no one knows about it. Number two, NXT. They deliver so strong with storyline progression and promos and big stars and matchups. And I mean the TV show. I'm sick and tired of the talking point that everyone says. People conflate it with TakeOver. I always liked NXT. I liked NXT before there was TakeOver shows. I like NXT for what it is as a developmental brand. And I always have. I wasn't really big into the buzzy stuff when it got cool, but I still liked watching it. I kind of took a little break, but like, it's still a really solid TV show. And number one, the archetype that NXT is trying to follow, CWF Worldwide. That is what wrestling TV is supposed to be like. If you don't like that, then go watch Evolve, because they're the ones who are doing super shows with great matches on every show. But if you want weekly wrestling TV, watch CWF Mid-Atlantic.
Yeah, my three, NXT number three. Number two, I went with SmackDown. I think they've really reinvented themselves, and it has the angles are generating or hitting home. It has like an old school build with a modern twist to it. I'm really enjoying it. And of course, number one, CWF Worldwide. The booking's so good, the announcing's so good. We get good wrestling, interesting characters, good solid promo work. It's episodic. It builds upon. I mean, and that's the great thing. The promotion of this TV show, it gives it so much equity by watching it for the whole entire year, because everything starts mattering more and more, especially when you get to know the characters and the booking style and the flavor of it. I think that has more to do with a lot of it is the flavor of the promotion. I mean, so much, and it means a lot to me, too. Match of the year. My three, top three. I can't even pronounce the promotion. I want to say Liga, like Lita or something.
It's Lucha LA Elite.
Lucha Elite. I forgot, I didn't write the date down, sorry. LA Park versus Rush. I give it 4 3/4 stars. Incredible match. Number two, CWF Mid-Atlantic Worldwide, Trevor Lee versus Andrew Everett from June 18th this year, obviously. 4 3/4. IWRG, Canis Lupus versus Trauma 1, September 4th of this year. 5 stars. My only 5-star match this year. Epic match. Stephen Graham, I'm sure, would be happy that I had two Lucha matches in my top three. So there you go. I'll be free of not being a racist this week. Just there's a lot of great wrestling this year, and so it was hard to pick them. What about you?
Yeah, it was tough narrowing this one down, but number three, I went for Zack Sabre Jr. versus Jeff Cobb from RPW. Loved this match all the way through and through. It was all about real gritty grappling. A double turn kind of through the match. Gets Jeff Cobb over gigantically as being this powerhouse monster that can also keep on the floor with Zack Sabre Jr. Number two, similar match as it's Chris Hero versus Zack Sabre Jr. from the AAW Jim Lineman Tournament Night 2. My favorite match of theirs all year. I liked their other matches quite a lot as well, but this one had the most violence and the most epic finish as it kind of built and built with violence and intensity all the way till the end. And my number one match of the year for 2016 is your number two, Trevor Lee versus Andrew Everett from CWF Mid-Atlantic. Jesus Christ, this match was phenomenal. The storytelling, the spots that these guys can do back and forth. Their chemistry with each other is impeccable, as they've been wrestling with each other since they've been kids. I mean, this match is just so great. Go out there and watch this, guys. yeah, just amazing, amazing match. In a year with amazing matches.
Rookie of the year.
All right, so my rookie of the year number three is Ben Kay. Just recently changed his name to that. He is a young boy in Dragon Gate who's really already putting everything together and standing out majorly as a possible top star. Number two, Leo Rush. Guy is just fucking out of this world. You forget how little he's been wrestling just from, like, every time I see him. I mean, God, he's just so good already. And number one, obviously, Matt Riddle. The guy is just a phenom when it comes to wrestling. I mean, he's at the level of guys who are Wrestler of the Year already, and he's only been doing this for, like, 20 months at this point. So how do you go for anybody else as the Rookie of the Year?
Yeah, this is a strong rookie class, according to Meltzer. I went with Yehi, number three, even though I don't think he's a rookie. But Meltzer can analyze him as a rookie. Leo Rush, number two, and Matt Riddle, number one, baby. That's a hell of a three rookies.
Yeah.
Best non-wrestler. Number three, I went with Dario Cueto. He's always good, you know, just always consistent. You know, he's just very sinister. My next pick was Steve Corino. I thought he was excellent in carrying with his promo work, especially in the build to the BJ Woodmer thing. I thought he was entertaining at times when he needed to be funny. I thought he was a really good bright spot for Ring of Honor TV when it came to non-wrestling segments this year. My number one, Daniel Bryan. I think he's been the heart and soul of SmackDown. He's been the backbone I think he's been the key figure for talking smack and getting that over. What's the difference between this and after Raw? Daniel Bryan, really, you know? No one talks about after Raw or whatever the hell they call it. Because why? Because it doesn't. Daniel Bryan is much more entertaining than anything they throw on there. So for me, he was my best non-wrestler. Where were your three?
I almost had Steve Corino, but I thought because he wrestled a match, I wouldn't let myself count him. So,
okay, that's fair.
So I stretched, and my number three was Brad Stutz, even though he's also a commentator. Just because of his stuff where he comes in as kind of the law of CWF Mid-Atlantic is always really good when he's on the mic and playing that part up as well. So I kind of gave him that dual citizenship or dual roles. Number two, Stokely Hathaway. I guess I shouldn't have counted him because he's actually wrestled matches this year too, but technically not as Stokely Hathaway. So that's how you can get around it. Yeah. So you can get around that. But he's just so great going from, you know, Moose early in the year to TJP's and Catch Point in the middle of the year and the Dream Team. And then now with Thatcher, we were saying off the air, I think he brings life to Thatcher that just wasn't there for a lot of fans who maybe weren't appreciating Thatcher. I think they're going to start to once they get this rolling. And my number one was Dario Cueto because, like, yeah, I mean, he's just phenomenal in everything he does, holds that show together even if the show is bad, and a lot of times he would be the only good thing on an episode of Lucha Underground, so, you know, that's saying a lot for the guy.
All right, man. Best TV announcer.
I already kind of gave it away, but number three was Cecil Scott from CWF Mid-Atlantic. Just really good. There's a lot of bad announcers this year, so it was kind of tough, and a lot of okay announcers. Number two for me is Alan for Life. Alan from WXW. He does the shotgun and the English commentary for the big shows. I just love the guy. He's so good. And number one, obviously, Brad Stutz. The guy is just phenomenal as a commentator.
Yep. My number three is same as yours. Number two, I'm with Corey Graves. Man, I thought he was incredible on NXT. He's been a bright spot for Raw. He's probably the best announcer they have over there. And my number one was Stutz. I mean, of course, the dude's been incredible. And obviously, that's the best team in wrestling right now when it comes to calling a show. Those guys just know how to get things over. They really mix the humor with the action, with the heavy-handed angles and the serious angles. They know what tones to play and how to treat certain talents, where Stutz can talk down to a talent or really can't because he's a main eventer. He knows when's appropriate and what's not. He's freaking awesome. Worst TV announcer. Number three. I thought Byron Saxton. Number two, JBL. And number one, Mario Ronaldo.
Oh.
Yeah. He was killing me. He was killing me. Other besides the Cruiserweight Classic, I just feel like he's phony. I don't know what it is. Comparing Nikki Bella to Misawa leaves a bad taste in my mouth. I don't mind comparisons, but at least make them. Don't make them make me face it. Make it like a legitimate comparison. Make it a realism. I just thought he tried too hard. It just came across he was trying too hard. What are your three?
Number three is Riko Bushido. He is the sometimes color commentator for WXW, and he's really annoying. It's not 100% his fault, though, because I think English is his second language. But, God, he's always trying to put himself over and make bad jokes. Number two, Byron Saxton. He is worthless. There's no point in having him on the commentary team at all. He essentially is a man made out of cardboard. And number one is hands down the worst commentator that I've ever experienced in the history of wrestling, and that's Matt Stryker. He makes things that are bad worse, and he makes things that are good even worse than the bad things somehow. God, I hate Matt Stryker.
Yeah, if I had to do mine over, Stryker would be on there. I can't believe I left him off. All right. Best major shows.
Number three, Final Battle. It was just recently, but fuck, that card was good from top to bottom. I mean, Jesus, everything delivered. Everything really hit the spot and had an amazing finish and payoff at the end. I think everybody who should have gone over did, and they did a great job of storytelling coming out of it, where I was super excited. Number two, PWG Bola Night 2. I was there live. It has a Meltzer 5-star match that I didn't even think was the best match on the show. It had some of the greatest wrestlers on the planet Earth all in one building. Everyone had a phenomenal match that night. So, yeah, that show was so good. And my number one was the SCI Night 2, the finals and the tournament matches and everything. I think that the tournament told a great story there. There was the Tale of Redemption with Gunnar Miller coming back, stuff with Hero and Rave, and just all in all, really well-told stories all the way through.
All righty. My number three was the Ring of Honor. My number three was Wrestle Kingdom. I thought that was a really strong show. Number two, Scenic City, Night 2. My best major show was Evolve, the July 16th show. I can't remember what Evolve number it was. But up and down, it just had so many killer matches. It was like an incredible show. But man, nowadays there's so many damn good shows that go out. I think this might be one of the harder categories to really limit to, because it's harder to remember all the damn, because there's so much good nowadays that it's from so many different companies, so wide variety of different companies. It's actually a harder. What do you think is the hardest category to pick?
Best major show for me is the hardest, honestly. There's so many great shows, and you have to think about everything that was on the card and all this, and like, yeah, that for me, that was the toughest one. Overrated, underrated is always difficult because, like, you're trying to remember what it actually means because it's all backwards. But yeah, for me, best major show is always the hardest one.
All right, guys, that's our picks, man. If you want to tweet at us, you can follow me, see me at Titans of Wrestling. Where you're at, Timothy?
Lucha Undead.
Tell us, man, if you liked our picks, hated them. What the hell were you thinking, Timothy? What the heck, Pete? You're the best. Whatever you want to say. we don't care. Man, Timothy, what do you got to plug, man?
That's it. Follow me on Twitter, and you'll find everything there. I do other podcasts and write articles and stuff, and you can find it all on my Twitter.
Yep. Follow me at Titans of Wrestling again. Thanks a lot. Have a great Christmas, folks. And if we don't hear from talk to you before, have a great New Year. Have a good night. Life.
caught me at the reception desk. Sketching on flesh, my perceptions of death.